This is the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. My next guest is a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He was inducted 2 years ago, not for his singing or songwriting ability, but for his amazing work in the studio as an engineer and a producer on some of the seminal rock albums that became the classics that we know today. Albums by the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, Eric Clapton, The Who, The Eagles. I mean, if I go through this list, I got to throw in Steve Miller and the Ozark Mountain Daredevils and the wonderful Joan Armatrading and Midnight Oil and The Clash and on and on and on. His name is Glyn Johns, and he has written about his life in and out of those studios in a terrific new autobiography called Sound Man, and I'm happy to have him on the show today. Hi, Glyn. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It's actually not really an autobiography. It's a memoir. There's little about my personal life, thank God. It'd be pretty boring, really. Actually, I've not really had a personal life. I've been so busy working.
I was just going to say, because of all the time you spent in the studio, this is really your life.
You're absolutely right. I'm sorry I corrected you. That's very funny. Yeah.
I'm always fascinated by process, and I love to talk to people about how they did what they did. And one of the things I've always been curious about is, when Mick Jagger and Keith Richards or Pete Townsend or Lennon and McCartney walk into a studio, they don't have a finished product. You have to turn it into a finished product. What do they bring you, and how do you take that into what we end up hearing later on?
Well, what they bring me is their talent. They bring me their extraordinary talent to perform and also to write. Before we get in the studio, very often it's been discussed, and we know pretty much what we're going to do. Not with everybody. Some people write in the studio. The Stones certainly did. It's just a different process with everybody, and actually that's what makes the job so fascinating and interesting, and what makes me learn every time I walk in with the next one. It's just wonderful.
But would they walk in with a demo and say, hey, listen to this?
Sometimes. Very often I'd have been sent the demo before the process. I'd have been sent demos of all the songs that are being considered. And in the case of the Rolling Stones, you'd walk in with absolutely nothing very often, and it would be written in the room while you were working. When I worked with the Beatles, which was literally for 2 minutes relatively to everything else, the songs had been written by the individuals in the band before the sessions, and each member of the band would present a song at a given moment in time, and it would be presented to the others, and an arrangement would be done in the room and played and performed and recorded. And again, it really differs. Some of the artists would have fairly complete demos of their idea that I may or may not understand, and other times it might just be somebody sitting in front of me with a guitar playing a song they'd written.
All right, well, let me ask you about a specific song then, for example.
Okay.
You worked with the Stones on so many things. You recorded them live. You helped them produce things like, well, let's take Sympathy for the Devil, which is a more than 6 minute long classic song. I wonder if when Mick and Keith composed that, they envisioned it that way, or did they come into the studio and say, okay, help us flesh this out, and you said, okay, well, we'll put a long percussion intro, we'll put the instrumental portions here. What was your role in turning that into the song that we know it as?
Okay, I have to say that the Rolling Stones really always produced themselves, although they had producers sitting in the chair, almost entirely the producer. I was actually never credited or paid as their producer. I was their engineer. So my involvement literally would have been to get the sound. And I might have had the odd comment about the arrangement, but invariably Mick and Keith had a very clear idea about what they wanted to do with the arrangement as the song progressed. As I say, they may well have written it in the studio. So the process was far more to do with them coming up with ideas than anybody else, and they're to be credited with that, particularly Mick, who would take the overall view while Keith was working on the basic rhythm track. And come up with ideas possibly about the structure of the song. He may very well write the top line of the song while Keith's working out the chord sequence. It was that interesting to watch the process go on, because, as I say, they very rarely turned up with something that was completely written.
So with the Stones, you had these two songwriters who were working together or sometimes separately and then bringing it together. But with The Who, Pete Townsend was really the chief songwriter for the vast majority of stuff that The Who recorded. How did that work?
I don't think they ever recorded anything that wasn't his. And that's a completely different process. Pete was an extraordinarily good recording engineer. He had a studio in his house. And he would present me with very complete and complex demos with him playing everything on them. So therefore, part of my role in that situation was to help convert what Pete had played on the demos to what John Entwistle and Keith Moon would do with it, which would be completely different, you can guarantee. And actually, very often, I didn't have to say anything because they were quite capable of coming up with what they wanted to do themselves, more than capable, in fact.
How did you come to...
a different process, a complete song, he'd arrive at it, and they'd figure out what they were going to do, and we'd record it, and that would be it, really.
How did you come to work with the Eagles?
David Geffen approached me and asked me to come to California and see them, which, in fact, I went and saw them play in Denver, Colorado, I think it was. They interested me. I don't think I heard demos. I think I was impressed with Geffen's invitation, although I'd never heard of him before. He was in partnership with Elliot Roberts. He was managing Joni Mitchell and I think Crosby, Stills and Nash at the time, so it was a pretty heavy calling card, really.
Yep.
So that's how it was David Geffen that invited me to produce them. He'd signed them to his new label, Asylum Records, which I'd never heard of. I'd never heard of him either, if it comes to that. So anyway, I went and saw them, didn't like them in concert at all, thought they were pretty awful. And he kept on at me, and I then took them into a rehearsal room and discovered really what they were about by a quirk of fate, them playing me one song on an acoustic guitar. And I heard clearly what their vocal sound actually really was, which I hadn't really noticed before because of the bad sound when I'd seen them play.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you.
To me, was the magic of the band.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you because you said they were horrible, and I wonder if you didn't like the songs, you thought that they were not good showmen, or was the sound just bad?
Well, it was a combination of all of it. They were playing sort of Chuck Berry, and you know there was a mixture of sort of cover stuff in the set, which didn't impress me particularly. But the sound was bad. The whole circumstance was not good. And actually, they weren't impressive to look at even. So it was unfortunate. But it was just a bad hair day, you know, whatever you want to look at it. And I was proved completely wrong when I had initially turned them down. And having heard them sing this one song with an acoustic guitar and realizing what the vocal sound was, I had a very clear picture of what I'd love to do with them. And sort of hopefully led them down the road to a degree. And, of course, they were halfway down it already. I just had to catch up, I think.
What was that song? Do you remember?
I think it was Most of Us Are Sad, which was sung by Randy Meisler, the bass player, with the others providing vocal backup to it.
And you went on to produce that debut album, and it ended up going platinum. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, it's perfectly all right. You can interrupt me as much as you like. The more you talk, the better, really. My voice is going here. Go on.
Let's talk a little bit about Led Zeppelin. You recorded their debut album, and part of the story in the book is that you took it around and played it for some of the other rock and rollers who you knew, and they weren't that impressed.
No, a lot of people have asked me about this, and I'm surprised everyone's picked up on it to the extent they have. I suppose it's because of the people I played it to. That, I mean, I was working with the Beatles, and I just finished the Led Zeppelin album, and I was thrilled to bits with it, as you can imagine. I mean, it was a pretty extraordinary experience. And not only was I thrilled with the band itself, but I was particularly pleased with the job I'd done recording it. And I was showing off, really. I was working with the Beatles, and I was in conversation with George Harrison, and I said, I've got to play you this record I've just made with Jimmy Page's band. It's just astonishing. And on the way home, we both passed Olympic Studios because we both lived in the same direction out of London. And I said, let's stop on the way home, and I'll play you the